Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back, folks. We're waiting to get Chief Kirkpatrick on the line, the NOPD superintendent, and we'll talk about the crime stats for 2025 that look really good, quite frankly. And it's always good to see this work over a number of years where it's just not an anomaly year. They have continued over the last 3 years to be able to drive the crime rate down, and it's always a positive happenstance. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the 2026 budget as well. And this most recent happenstance about the funding to support recruitment and retention bonuses, and obviously the necessity of overtime, how much, and you know what we're doing it differently to make sure that we're monitoring that each and every day moving forward so that we don't experience the surprises that we did before. And hopefully, you know, that's the situation that we'll have moving forward. A lot of challenges. Cutback management is not easy, and the city is going to be faced with that because of the deficit posture that they find themselves in. And moving forward, you want to be able to generate and spin off enough monies to be able to remediate your properties, manage your properties, keep them up to snuff, keep them compliant with code would be nice as well, because you're out there holding others accountable to the code, building code and things of that nature. And hopefully they do a self audit and they look at their own buildings and they make sure that they are compliant. You lead by example. And it would be really nice to see that exercise take place. And, you know, there's been a lot of folks that I think that make an issue and were texting in to me earlier about this take-home car policy. I am a big advocate of the take-home car policy for law enforcement agencies. I think you can extend the life of the vehicle when you do so. We used to be able to get 6 to 7 years out of our vehicles. We had a maintenance program set up to ensure that. That saves you money. If you have the take-home car available to officers, they take pride in that automobile. They actually ended up spending some of their own money in that automobile. You know, we set up wash racks at the sheriff's office. We made it real easy for them to maintain that vehicle. It, you know, was part of the policy to keep it clean, to keep it vacuumed out and everything else, which has to go with that benefit, because you want to elongate the life cycle of that vehicle. Part of what was revealed the other day by the legislative auditor were, obviously, when you take vehicles out of the inventory, you should dispose of them, right? And one of the ways to dispose of it is to go to auction on these vehicles. And we would do that every year. We would auction the vehicles that we take out. Typically, we would bring in, but most of the years that Sheriff Lee was there, and while I was there, somewhere between 60 to 100 vehicles a year would enter the inventory. And, you know, based on the rotation of mileage and year and the age of vehicles as they were rolling out, which is what we typically did. All right, so we're going to try and connect up to the chief. Let us just go to our first break now, and we'll be...
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Right back. Welcome back, folks. This is a time of year where you look back in 2025, you post your annual crime stats, and joining us now is Chief Ann Kirkpatrick, the superintendent of the NOPD. Chief, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Sheriff.
Chief, as we look back at 2025, your thoughts about the crime stats that y'all have posted?
Well, we're pleased that we were able to still show overall a very good trend down when you look at the three-year mark. But we're pleased, and obviously our tactics are working, our strategies are working.
Absolutely. I've never been one that says you judge the effectiveness of a law enforcement agency by the murder rate. I'd much rather focus on the solution rate. It seems to me that y'all have been able to really make significant improvements in solution rates across the board.
Well, that's a really good way of framing it, Sheriff. I appreciate that mindset that is about the absence of victims, the absence of harm. It's what we should be celebrating, because for every one of those numbers, it still represents someone has been harmed. And there's a person behind that number and a grieving family.
No doubt. There were issues, obviously, that revealed themselves over the year, more so from a global perspective in the budget of the city. Y'all have gone through the budget process for 2026. How confident are you that there's enough dollars for you to be able to continue to deliver this downward trend?
Well, I'm confident in that it's quite obvious that even the current administration, which is still Mayor Cantrell, and the form in the upcoming administration, Mayor-elect Moreno, there's a commitment that has been shown, that is a positive commitment by the council, that they are going to support this police department. Even when other departments in the city have had to experience considerable cuts, and we are not being cut, and that is a very strong commitment. So I think that the money will stabilize, and I think that there is a good plan of going forth that will show that the budget will stabilize.
The most recent revelation of the dollars not being available that were supposedly set aside in ARPA to support the recruitment and retention bonus, your thoughts about that, and were you surprised?
Well, I think that everybody's surprised when there is an unexpected shortfall. So, yes, the officers fulfilled their commitment. Their part of the bargain was, hey, if we stay for 3 years, the city had committed that they would pay them bonuses for fulfilling that commitment. And the officers did fulfill their commitment. And so, again, I think showing great good faith, Mayor-elect Moreno has committed that money is going to be paid. And I think she rolled out even a date. I think it was even like next week. So, again, everybody's trying to work in good faith, but it was quite a discouragement because the officers were actually expecting it as early as November. I think they've been patient. But I think, again, we've got this over with and dealt with.
Now, this program seemed to be an opportunity to put more money in the hands of your officers without raising the base rate, their hourly rate, and therefore increasing overtime costs, knowing that you guys were going to have to utilize a lot of overtime. Are there discussions about doing another similar program to this?
You know, not that I know of, as far as, you know, these were one-time monies. The bonuses are one-time monies. So as you said, it's not baked into a salary raise. I think that always money will always be an issue for anyone who works in government that, you know, is there money to pay? Also, you've got to be competitive. And in the world of law enforcement right now, everybody is fishing in the same pool for getting candidates to apply to their agencies. And so money matters when we are in such a competitive field. So, I always want to advocate for as much money as possible for officers and professional staff as well. In order to, you know, definitely be, if you're the best of the best, you should pay the best of the best.
Yeah. You know, when I look at it, it's about a $3,300 over that 3-year period of time, a year increase, which is, nothing to overlook. And obviously, when you're managing and you're in a position of possibly being in cutback management for the entire administration, not necessarily the NOPD, you try and find innovative ways to do so. And that's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
But it also... Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, also, you know, there are other ways as well to be competitive. Money will always matter. But actually, alternative work schedules are very important to people. So maybe I would look at New Orleans, where maybe the salary is not as high as another agency, but maybe the working conditions or the fact that you can have a take-home car or you have certain shifts that work better for your lifestyle. So it's not always has to be money. It can be time off. Things of that nature can make you more competitive.
I wholeheartedly believe in that. And you know, I did that for a long time because we just didn't have the money. I think a lot of other factors that could be motivators as well.
Exactly.
Chief, one of the things that happened in 2025 that it was, I think, a disappointment to a lot of people was the revelation of overtime abuse and the lack of accountability. And I know that y'all have worked hard to try and address that. If you would, for the listening audience, tell folks where are you on that and how you're going to be able to execute on that accountability factor.
Yeah. So the city did not give the police department, I don't know about the other departments such as the fire and so forth, we didn't have an overtime budget line item. And so you can't manage something you don't have. That's kind of a basic principle. However, knowing that we are at minimum 300 officers short, that's typically the overtime that is spent is from the salary savings of vacant positions you're not paying some full-time officer for. And so when you actually do the math, we spent less money using overtime than if we had 300 fully filled positions. And so that's historically where managing an overtime budget is associated with salary savings from vacancies. We had no line item to begin with, and so we were just having to fill shifts. But, you know, again, where's accountability when there's not a structure? What am I being measured toward? That has been corrected in the future budget line item. They gave me for the 2026 budget an actual overtime line item, and it is now up to me to make sure that we walk or operate within that budget line. If we have to go outside of that, we'll have to explain the reason for it, such as an unexpected snowstorm. That's not necessarily budgeted. And so those are the kind of factors from an executive mindset that has to be explained.
I think a lot of folks don't understand that there actually is the capability of savings when you manage the overtime appropriately, because you're not paying the benefit factor that could be anywhere from 35 to 52% depending on the structure of the benefit package there. You're also not making a contribution to the pension fund on overtime. Used to do that. Most pension funds don't allow it anymore because it kind of depends on the whim of the leader, and you can increase people's pensions by an extraordinary number by allowing overtime to be. And that, and I don't know what y'all's pension contribution number is, but I it's probably fairly large.
It is.
So there's a significant cost savings there. And I just throw that out because I know that personally we used to look at that all the time. And sometimes it actually made sense instead of hiring additional folks to just manage an overtime budget.
That's actually true. And, you know, everyone knows this is like my ninth agency, my fifth as the chief of police. And that's a very common budgeting practice. So just if we were to use basic math here, if you're 300 officers short and it costs approximately $100,000 per officer, that includes benefits and everything, that's $30 million, right? So if your overtime budget is you spent $25 million, you're actually coming under what it would have cost to be fully staffed. We're too low in staffing, so I don't necessarily think it's a win. But it, when you look at the money alone, actually the amount of overtime we spent would have come under than having a fully staffed police department. And one other thing, as long as we remain under 1,200 officers, the city pays a fine to the pension board for being underfunded. And so that's why that 1,200 mark is very important. Not only for services, but we pay a penalty to the pension.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize how that works, but it's all about the unfunded accrued liability that's generated as a result. And they have an expectation there's going to be a certain contribution level. And when it's below that, they have to go work some magic on the back end. It's not easy either, right?
Yes. It's a big time finance, and I consider myself somewhat business savvy. I understand money. I understand how to what is needed to have the executive mindset of understanding budgets, and I do. But I do understand as well when you see headlines. Wow, the budget is look at NLPD's budget, overtime budget. Wow, what happened here? Actually, those are the kind of factors behind it. You have to start with the overtime budget to begin with to even manage it. And we had zero. We had zero in the line item.
So was there just like no communication back and forth as to any expectation on that line item?
No, there was understanding that, I had to operate on the overtime basis because of the vacancy. So there was certainly communication. And, I can't, and I'm not going to speak to what happened. I don't know what happened, but I can tell you we were aware from the get-go that we had no overtime budgeted in the New Orleans Police Department budget. We knew that. So we were flying blind. We knew we were. But overall, as I just kind of shared with y'all, I still believe we came in under what you could have expected with a fully staffed police department.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all about the presentation and having the structure in place to account for same. Right. And
absolutely.
I think you would admit that probably in some of the other places where you served, there was that structure and there was that accountability on a monthly basis as to where you stood.
Oh, absolutely. And so that is when I came here, I kept saying, I've never seen this. I've never seen this type of budgeting. I've never seen this. And I think that we're moving into a structure that is common and one I understand fully. I do understand, though, that overtime is always the bucket that will be tapped into by the city when they need monies for other projects. They're always going to tap that overtime budget. So that's not uncommon to me. But you got to start with something in the line item. And that's where I was saying, I've never seen this before. How can I have a zero line item in overtime?
And I'm sure that in other places you've not seen the demand for the services that you have to provide as it relates to special events either.
New Orleans is unique in being the special events, for me, the capital of the world. But, you know, you're going to look at places like, look at Las Vegas, look at Washington, D.C. You talk about events. Mm-hmm. I mean, they know that world, but not every city is. We are unique in a positive way. That's one of the special things about New Orleans, is that we are a place for entertainment. Our financial foundation as tourism, of course. And so it's wonderful. It's a positive.
As you look forward in 2026, is staffing still the primary challenge for you guys, like it is for a number of other agencies?
It is. Right now, you know, when I came, I had three major goals, which was the reduction of the crime, the getting out of the consent, or I should say graduating from consent, and then, of course, staffing. And so staffing still remains now for me one of the very top goals that I will have for 2026. I'd like to hire 200 new officers this year. But people also need to realize for every year, you're going to lose about 70, 75 officers who have reached retirement eligibility. They move on out of the city, whatever it might be. So we average 75. So if you're hiring 200, you're only gaining 100. So if we're 300 officers down, you're talking years of trying to dig out of that hole. To hire the right people and not compromise and not lower standards. I refuse to lower standards to fill vacancies.
The truth be told, if we were completely honest, in the environment that we find ourselves in today, that number's not really achievable. I mean, as aggressive as we recruited, and I've seen others recruit, and you've been in IECP, and I've been in major county sheriffs and the national sheriffs, looking across all of that, I don't see hardly any agency reach those types of numbers.
It's going to be difficult to do it, but it is doable, and I'm one of those people. I'm kind of like, we can make this happen. It is how we go about doing it. But again, we have to have the best of the best, and everybody wants it. You wanted that as the sheriff. You always want to be the best team, right?
Sure.
And you should.
Absolutely.
And you should never compromise that. Any chief or sheriff who doesn't think they're the best of the best, you know, shame on you. You know, chief, sheriffs, you know, you should take pride in the agency you have, and everybody should want to put the best people on their team. And that's what I'm going to do. But it is doable, and I'm working toward it without lowering standards, as I said.
Yeah. I just say that because I think sometimes folks have these unreasonable expectations. Yeah. Not you, but yeah. I'm talking to others in interpreting what we're actually saying here, that it's going to be a failure on someone's part if we don't get to that number. And it's like there's so, you know, When you look at just federal law enforcement, who's for the first time in a long, long time, and I think you'll agree with me here, they have a reduction in force that they've seen and an attrition rate they've never seen before, mm-hmm. and they're struggling.
Yes, you know, they are. Everybody is. The feds are.
And the rate of pay.
Everyone is. We had the George Floyd effect, and that's when everybody was like, okay, I'm out of here. And because it was like no one wanted to be a part of law enforcement. We are a noble profession, whatever branch of law enforcement you're in. But we have caused some harm, and we're working toward healing those fractures. And I think New Orleans has done a fabulous job in that. But we all are competing with each other, and everybody's got major holes because there was such an exodus after George Floyd in law enforcement.
Yeah. Chief, obviously, there's so much more to talk about, and I know you're busy. We really appreciate the time that you spend with us, and thank you so much. Best of luck to you in 2026.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. I look forward to another opportunity in the future.
Thank you, ma'am. That is Chief Ann Kirkpatrick, and we will be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll visit with Russell Richardson, President and CEO of the St. Tammany Economic Development Corporation. Stay with us.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Folks, welcome back. We are joined by Russell Richardson, President and CEO of the St. Tammany Economic Development Corporation. Russell, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell. Thanks for having me on.
So, Russell, if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, I think you are actually relatively new to the St. Tammany Economic Development Corporation. Why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself and your history?
Yeah. So, like you said, recently here to St. Tammany, I guess coming back from Baton Rouge, I worked for BRAC the last 10 years. That's the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. Now, partnership, as they call it. And then before that, at LED, the State Economic Development Agency. But North Shore native, originally from Washington Parish, so grew up in this area, lived and worked here for a good bit before I moved away and now back. So great to be back in the community and, working in this space along with the businesses and the stakeholders here to help grow this economy. So it's exciting times for me personally and professionally there.
Well, congratulations to you for sure, and welcome back home. That long trek from Baton Rouge, right? back to St. Tammany.
It wasn't too far away, but it's been a good 10 years there, but all good.
So, Russell, I know you've had your finger on the pulse of a lot of things going on the North Shore. As you look back in 2025, talk about some of the big project wins for St. Tammany.
Yeah, so it's been good to come back in and just kind of see, when I left, I was in small business, and then coming back in just to see what the lay of the land looks like in terms of the projects and companies that are here, certainly a different market from the Baton Rouge market. So, coming in, just in the time I've been here, approaching about 3 or 4 months now, you got Amazon had a grand opening, Equipment Share, who's got multiple locations around the state. I think right before I got in, Agile Cold Storage, they had announced a cold storage distribution facility on the east side of the parish. So you had those things taking place, as well as two recent announcements. You had Boudreaux's great win for Mandeville, the jewelry store, adding capacity to them to their operations, as well as Chilco, which is another company that's got multiple operations in the state and across the southeast. And that was kind of the first thing I noticed just kind of coming into St. Tammany, was just kind of how connected the companies here are to the state ecosystem and the regional ecosystem. You've probably talked about, LED having, they've talked about their success this year in 2025, $60 billion worth. I think it was like 9,000 jobs. It was, and you hear the Hyundai and the Meta and the LNG facilities. But what I have found coming here in St. Tammany is a lot of the companies here, like Chilco, that recently announced their expansion, they are connected to those industrial ecosystems. So, for me, looking into 2026 is, let's get to know our companies and understand how we are all connected to these different projects that we've heard about across the state. If you think about even Meta, we've got the engineering company Empirical that's here. I know once the Meta project was announced, a little ways into it, Empirical is helping to design some of that power infrastructure as it relates to that project. So you just have a lot of connections across the state and in the regions that we have going with these our projects and companies here. So that's exciting for me coming in this position, and just, you know, looking forward to getting to know the companies and their stories and how we can elevate that overall business story for St. Tammany Parish.
Yeah, you know, what was that old adage, reach out and touch someone? These projects, whether it's Meta in North Louisiana, Hyundai more centrally located, they reach out and they touch all of these parishes. And as you point out, some of the companies that are located within St. Tammany and otherwise providing services for these projects.
Yeah, and that's a lot of it. You know, we've got, kind of looking into 2026, you know, we've got there's probably 20 or 30 projects in our pipeline that we're working now. They probably represent, you know, a little over $2 billion worth of investment, you know, around 2,000 jobs. And, you know, there's probably some that may, you know, come across the finish line and be able to announce here in the first or second quarter of this year, I hope. So just a lot of good potential, particularly in the manufacturing logistics. You know, St. Tammany has a lot of the corporate professional headquarters presence. There could be additional announcements in that space as well. So a lot of good momentum going into 2026. I heard you talking to Michael Heck yesterday. If we could just be half the 2026 version of Michael, we'll be winning. So
absolutely. I want to jump and pivot to this real quick, but there's other things I want to talk about, but we're running out of time, unfortunately. The Inspire Startup Slam, I think, is tonight, right, at Columbia Theater in downtown Hammond. Talk to us about that. That's something that has been growing, and it's a great opportunity for entrepreneurs.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Chinzo Corona on our staff, he is the executive director of the Startup North Shore program, and that's a really cool event, kind of one of the anchor events that he does every year. It'll be my first time to get there, so I'm really looking forward to getting there and just participating and being in that environment with all the companies and the small businesses and the stakeholders. It'll be in Hammond at the Columbia Theater, 4:30. Networking starts 6 o'clock. The actual pitch, it's like a Shark Tank pitch competition. He's got three finalists, where it started with about 30 companies. They narrowed down over the last few months, and so these three finalists will come in tonight and pitch to the judges, and one of them will win the grand prize. So it's a $100,000 competition, so it's a good chance for these companies to win funding towards the products and services that they're working on. But importantly for us, it brings together these small businesses. It showcases the ecosystem that we have here on the North Shore, as that's so important to the work that we do, that then can grow into these projects that we've just been talking about.
Attendance is free. You can register online at startupnorthshore.com. I wanted to talk, one of the big infrastructure projects that's always talked about on the North Shore is the widening of I-12. I know they started in some areas. Where does that stand at the present time, Russell?
Yeah, so they recently celebrated kind of the completion of, I think it was like kind of the third tranche that they were working on, sort of between, I guess, the Highway 190 and 21 exits there. Recently went to kind of a ribbon cutting celebration. So that was really good in terms of expanding and completing that. And you know, I got the chance to make a few comments there, and that's important, as, you know, most of the greenfield project opportunities that we will have over the next 5-6 years here in St. Tammany Parish are along those interstate exits. So just improving the capacity of not only the interstates, but the roads throughout the parish. It makes us more competitive when it comes to marketing to projects. So from that economic development standpoint, That's a win. That's a good milestone for us to continue improving the infrastructure in the parish. So that was a good win, and hopefully more is to come there.
Yeah, especially because, and I don't think it's unfair to say this, but a lot of the local infrastructure, local roads, are two-lane roads, and a lot of folks jump on that interstate to get from one side of the parish moving east-west, west-east, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So there's, it's an overall approach, and I know that folks are thinking about how to approach and expand even not only the interstate but the service roads as things grow and people are moving around. You need more space on the roads to get to A to B.
And let's finish up with this topic. One of the things that everyone's been working on, and I know you guys have been very interested in it, about these foreign trade zones. If you would, for the benefit of the audience, what is it and what does it mean to St. Tammany?
Yeah, so a few months ago, or maybe even more recent than that, St. Tammany was included into the New Orleans foreign trade zone. So it just kind of puts us in that zone where if a company wants to take advantage, whether it's reducing their taxes or putting off fees, you can do that if you're an international company exporting, importing products. So that will make us more competitive as a parish in all these sites that we're working on along the interstate. Kind of makes us sort of a logistical corridor there, I-12 and 59 there, as the trade zone is now over St. Tammany Parish or includes St. Tammany Parish. And it's kind of connected to or is connected to the plans around the Louisiana International Terminal that's in the works and should come online in the next few years. So as those things come along, it just helps better position us to take advantage and be competitive in that space as it relates to projects and growth.
Well, Russell, thank you so much for joining us. We truly appreciate it. Congratulations on your new position there. Russell Richardson, President and CEO of the St. Tammany Economic Development Corporation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Neil. Talk to you soon.
We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we are going to visit with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. As you well know, the Crime Commission keeps stats on all of the activities within the New Orleans criminal justice system. So we'll spend some time looking at crime trends, and we'll look at movement through the criminal district court and what all of that means relative to 2025 year in review, and what we hope for and what we see Rafi and his organization focusing on in 2026. So we'll be right back with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. Stay with us.